people that think that the opportunity on TikTok is dead, what would you tell them?
Go into the metaverse. I'm Schotz, I'm the CEO of Neon Internet.
I'm Jacques, I'm the CEO of Neon Internet.
Creator economy can only function if we have attention as the most valuable resource.
What we will end up doing with all these technologies, I don't know. The fact is that it has the potential to take out the middlemen, so it gives more power to the individuals.
You have a creator that does not exist, which is a huge competition as well for the human creator.
Creatives need to move on then. They really need to find something else.
Without further ado, welcome, dear future creator.
For the people that think that the opportunity on TikTok is dead, what would you tell them?
Go into the metaverse.
All right. So is the opportunity on TikTok dead already?
Well, I mean, TikTok is not controversial. It's not uncontroversial.
It is controversial. Yeah,
it is controversial. Okay.
TikTok is a very controversial platform. So there have been many discussions about mental health. Last week, even I read an article. I was not sure whether it was fake or not. But the article said that American youth were developing tics because of TikTok videos. You know, like Tourette syndrome, etc., was spiking apparently in American teenagers, and they somehow tracked it down to TikTok. Well, with these things, you can never be sure whether it's true or not, but it's interesting nonetheless, because we know from several reports that also Instagram had similar effects, etc. So I can perfectly understand that some people don't like these platforms. And to these people, unfortunately, I think, you need to tell them, like, at the end of the day, as a creator, you need to be there where the audience is. And TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, Snapchat, those are the platforms that you have at your disposal. And the next phase in this entire process is going to be the metaverse. And in this roadmap to the metaverse, like, it's very hard to say right now which platforms will prevail. What's, in my opinion, quite obvious is that these methods on how we consume content, the interfaces that we consume, they are getting better and better. TikTok is more addictive. Well, I'm saying better and better, but...
It's more addictive.
Yeah.
It's better.
It depends on how the platform is better.
Taking attention.
Yeah.
It's better in taking attention. So for the attention economy, obviously it's a good thing. For the future, like the big factor that is probably going to decide where creators are going to go is whether the future of social networks is going to be decentralized, like using NFTs, Ethereum, cryptocurrencies, etc., as a backbone, or whether the platforms are going to stay centralized, use maybe similar mechanisms, but on proprietary platforms like Facebook or Meta, like TikTok. Only time will tell.
So what do people need to understand and know before listening to this episode? Who goes first?
Go ahead with the crypto stuff, and I'm going to take over for the metaverse.
Okay. So I would start at the very first part, which is Bitcoin, and then go to Ethereum, and then understanding NFTs, and then the metaverse. So to start, Bitcoin is an invention, basically, or is a use case of an invention. And the invention that was made by Satoshi Nakamoto is, in a decentralized system, you don't have to trust a central party that something is true. So you don't need a bank to say this transfer got through and they both have this amount of money on the bank account. You don't need a Facebook who is in front of the data and saves the data, but you just trust the network. So you can take the middleman out because you don't need to trust the middleman, middleman. You trust the network. That's the first important principle to understand the whole concepts. Then the second part is, then Bitcoin came and it's a currency. So it's something like gold or whatever you want to compare it to. Bitcoin is then something that you can send. You can send value, but not much more.
Mm-hmm. Digital cash.
Digital cash, exactly. Digital cash. It's basically digital cash. Without anyone that you need to trust that it's real, or you just need to trust the network.
Mm-hmm.
So then came Ethereum, and they said, why don't we add more use cases to this whole trustlessness and say you can actually run a program in this way. So you run a computer program that is not, where you don't trust anyone that it's being run as it was written, but you just trust the network. Once it's on the blockchain, it will always run the same way, and you cannot change anything in the code. So yeah, basically you trust the network that this program will always run the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can change it. Nobody can change some numbers in it so that there's problems. Based on that, you can now make NFTs, because NFTs are unique objects that live on the blockchain that are basically a computer program, a smart contract that runs on the blockchain. And you don't need to trust anyone that this unique thing is unique, that you hold it or someone else holds it, that it gets sent or not if you send it. So now we have a unique object, digital object, that mm-hmm. you can, without trusting any third party, send to anyone on the internet over the blockchain.
For people who might not know, what is an NFT?
Yeah, so NFT stands for non-fungible token. It basically represents assets that are stored on a blockchain and that represent digital certificates of ownership about something. And the something is very important, because many people might have heard about NFTs and think of images, but the NFT can actually be a deed, a certificate of ownership for anything. Could be a house, could be a membership card for some club, can really be anything. And these non-fungible tokens, they work because of the blockchain technology.
And these NFTs can also act as like a proof that I am part of X community.
Yes.
I think the simple thing is just an NFT is a unique object, a unique digital object, and it can basically represent anything. Mm-hmm. So art or a membership or a house, something in real life, which means that you can also use it in the way that you want. So if you want like to have people having your NFT to like have access for your content, that's fine. If you just want to send them an NFT to be like as a gift, it's fine. If you want to use it in a different way as a ticket for a festival or whatever, that works. It works as well. So,
yeah. So NFTs is a certificate of ownership in a very simple sense, and that ownership can be anything, even from like as simple as like having something in the digital world as well as in the physical world, but also certificate of being a member of X or even being a member of an enterprise and being a shareholder in a sense.
It's basically a social contract in that sense, okay. I guess, because it's also, we say certificate of ownership, but for clarification, of course, it's not a legal certificate of ownership that is accepted by the government. I think or like in front of court, it doesn't count, but for anyone who believes in blockchain, it counts, you know. If you show me I have this NFT on my wallet, I believe that you own this NFT and everything that comes with it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then we arrive at the metaverse, which...
Yes, so when the metaverse is the last thing that actually, the new layer that comes on top of all of this combination of blockchain technology and the internet, where through these principles of interoperability between users, platforms, etc., we get a new layer where people can have their own, where they can own the data that they work with, where we can be sure, like Jacques explained, that everything that's happening on this layer is actually correct, from a cryptographical point of view. And finally, through all these mechanisms, like we can build completely new experiences like combine it with AR, VR, games, where everything comes together, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's the metaverse. Like I always say, the metaverse is not a place you go, but it's an experience you have. And it's not like you put on the VR glasses and suddenly you are in the metaverse. That's not true. It's the experience you have online, the place where you put your attention into, and the combination of all these technologies that are now converging into one timeline that we didn't have before.
Converging into one timeline.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate like, on that?
Happening at the same time.
Yeah. We have blockchain, we have augmented reality, we have virtual reality, we have the internet, we have AI, we have Unreal Engine 5, like completely realistic games, and all this stuff. This is the metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything that's happening in this one path.
All the Web 2 companies also, in a sense.
Yeah, sure. Social media, every individual technology that you can imagine. The
rise of creators. And
what is Web3?
Yeah, so the most, like today, most social media platforms, for example, social media platforms, I could also say almost every platform uses email and password login. The data that you provide to the platforms is owned by the platforms. They have exclusive ownership over the data that you provide to those platforms. Web3, or the promise of Web3, is that this particular element is going to change because of blockchain technology. The logins that you will have will not be like, I need to type in a new password for every platform where I go to, but you click one button on the platform that says connect wallet, and immediately the platform reads all your data from the blockchain or from your wallet. Like on the Ethereum blockchain mostly, there are other blockchains that work in a similar way, but today it's mostly Ethereum. And in this sense, the entire login process and the data ownership properties change.
So if you think about it in relating to today's terms, like if we just like generalize it, like your wallet being a Google account, that Google account is going to open everything.
Yeah.
But it's not owned by the company.
Yes.
And it's owned by yourself.
Your data is basically public, and the companies only tap into the data, imagine it like some kind of ether out there where all the data is available. And if you decide to log into a new platform, you come there with your data, and the platform, uses that data that's already available. Of course, they can add additional layers on top. But, and that's also the transition maybe to this term of the metaverse. It has been in the news a lot. We have all heard about Facebook changing name, etc. Why has especially Facebook changed the name? That's the big question. Why did they go from Facebook to Meta? It's because they want to own this particular forefront of the internet, because they see this stuff coming, they see that it's happening, and they want to be there when the time comes where all of these mechanisms are being adopted by most of the big platforms.
Mm-hmm. So that's Web3, changing from from data that is owned by a company, you owning your data, if you don't go with Meta and Facebook, I would say, right? Because that's central. Yeah. That's centralized. How would you define the creator economy as of right now?
It's pretty vast. I think the creator economy is probably anything which taps into making or living off of creating something, in my opinion. And today, this has gone... like mostly it's like we see it as digital creations, you know, like content, stuff like this. This is basically what today's creator economy represents, I guess. So creating content, creating digital content that is interesting for people and they like to watch it. And therefore, the companies that host this content can also show ads between the content and make money off of that. So basically they are making money of the creations and they are giving a part of it. On YouTube, for example, they are paying out part of the revenues.
There's one important part also to add. When we talk about creator economy, we also need to talk about attention economy, because the creator economy can only function if people, if we have attention as the most valuable resource in this system. Mm-hmm. So how do creators today make most of their money? If people watch enough of their videos. Mm-hmm. And this also, again, with Web3, there will be new native monetization systems that will probably pop up where the factor attention gets diminished. And the factor I pay to see something by somebody because I like this guy and I want to support him will go up. And that's a new kind of balance that will, in my opinion, hopefully come into play and thus also distribute the resources more fairly so that the big platforms get less from the big piece of cake that is our attention that is out there.
So how would that work? Because I'm just thinking about like it's similar to... So first thing that pops into my mind as you're talking about like someone pays you to see you is like I pay a ticket to watch a movie, but I also pay to see some exclusive content on Patreon.
Yeah.
Patreon, OnlyFans, that's the most popular examples that we have. This stuff also is being rebuilt in Web3 right now. Mm-hmm. If you've been observing the entire NFT hype for the past year, there have been many scams, but there have also been many very interesting use cases where artists that were previously not able to monetize their content have now found ways to do this. And now for creators, in terms of OnlyFans and Patreon, the most obvious thing to happen is that through NFTs, these people can create gated access to their content. So that only people that own a specific amount of their token can actually see the content that they create. Mm-hmm. And that's the interesting part, because then they can decide how much they want to offer the content for, how much they can monetize it in the future, for example, by royalties that are attached to the NFTs. And the more their community grows, the more money, obviously, and the more leverage they get in this system.
I was just trying to understand like where we are right now and like thinking about when was crypto, when did Bitcoin come out and all those different things. And then I was thinking, okay, when did YouTube come out? And when was the first time that YouTube actually monetized and people got really famous on it, which was around 2015 where they got monetized, but actually it was in 2005 where it launched, and it launched as a dating site. So, it was a dating site first. You put out your videos so that you get on dates with someone, and then it built out into creators. So if you think about it, we are not even at the 5 year mark now for Bitcoin? No, 10 years. It's 2013?
2008. 14. Eight? Yeah, Bitcoin was born in 2008.
Okay, well, then we are way ahead. But we're still in the whole...
I would give an analogy for this. I would actually say that Bitcoin was a technology invention similar to the internet in a sense. So I would even zoom out and give it more time even. Because if we are looking at Bitcoin, it solved something very important, which is this digital uniqueness of something. And you don't need someone who tells the truth. So you just trust the network. So you don't need the middleman. Like Mish said, Facebook doesn't have to own your password and your login so that you can log in, but you can just do it via the network and via encryption and stuff we don't have to discuss, it works.
Yeah.
So this invention was like really put into place as Bitcoin as a use case in 2008-09.
Yeah.
So that's 14 years. And if we look at the internet from like, it took, I don't know, 50 years or so until it was in really mainstream households.
Yeah.
So let's say Bitcoin accelerates much faster because we already have the internet, so information's like goes quicker and we organize faster, etc. We have more tools, but still we might just be like in the very beginning of it.
Because it's a different way of thinking.
Yeah, it's a new technology that has to be built. So and has to be explored, discovered. And Bitcoin was created 2009, 2008.
Yeah, after the
or 2008, yeah. And Ethereum came 2014.
14, yeah.
So this whole Web3 thing only started maybe, or yeah, the whole NFT, like that people are actually using Ethereum really like in the Web3 ethos that you're connecting with your MetaMask on the website with your thing. That's maybe 2 years old or 3 years, or it happened before, but in the sense that it's actually was being built and working, prototypes were working.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually everything is pretty new. So yeah, it's a very exciting time. You know, we are reliving something that is like just at the beginning and might change a lot of things.
Yeah, we're just speculating, basically.
Informed speculation, I would say.
Informed speculation. Yeah. What is
no,
it?
No, it's I always hate people that say this will be 100% like this in 10 years. It might end up like this, you know. We can't never really say, you know. I think probably in the beginning people were not thinking that we all had a smartphone, you know.
Yeah.
So what we will end up doing with all these technologies, I don't know, but it will be the fact is that it has the potential to take out the middleman, so it gives more power to the individuals
to the creator
that are on the other side of the middleman. Yeah. And how this will work is really hard to say, but there is the potential for a lot of mechanisms that have not existed yet. So actually the things that will be interesting are the things that can only be created in that Web3 technology that cannot exist this way in the internet, in the normal internet. And that's, yeah, that will be the thing that will, yeah, I don't want to make predictions.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So how would a traditional online creator right now, how would he prepare himself for the future to come?
I think it depends at this moment, like really on two things: the niche that you're trying to serve,
mm-hmm.
and the content, like the technological mindset that you have approaching the thing. Because of course, with like with any industry, there are fluctuations in terms of how stuff moves forward. And as Jacques just said, doing predictions on when certain things will happen is very difficult. I think now is the period where you can really try to accumulate knowledge,
mm-hmm.
to be among the first to really tap into all the new technological stuff that is coming up, which is not only Web3, but also AI.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we already talked very briefly about DALL-E, DALL-E 2 by OpenAI, which in my opinion is going to revolutionize the creative industry in ways completely unimaginable.
So just for the people that didn't listen to that part, what is DALL-E?
So DALL-E or DALL-E, like WALL-E, but DALL-E, you know, very interesting name actually. DALL-E is an image generation algorithm by OpenAI, which is a company that was, to some degree also belongs to Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
And this algorithm is the most powerful image AI that was ever created. It is so powerful that you can tell the AI, okay, generate an image of three people sitting around the table with a cup of coffee and a glass of water on the table, and it's going to generate a perfect image of three people sitting around the table with a cup of coffee and a glass of water on the table.
You can tell it the style of the image, like in the 80s, drawn with a pencil, drawn on oil, or any like pixelated whatever, and or even the setting probably like in the 80s in 2000s.
Crazy stuff,
like, and then it gives you different variations. It's incredible.
The craziest example I've seen was draw Hong Kong in the 1980s in a steampunk setting. So the AI knew how Hong Kong looked and felt like.
Yeah.
It knew what steampunk was, and it knew how Hong Kong looked in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of vibe, like seeing those images, really gives you an idea on how brilliant this invention is. Like in my opinion, it's no longer art, it's science.
Mm-hmm.
And the engineer becomes the artist, which is for the creative industry a very sad evolution, because it also means that the job of the creative person, like the artist, evolves from being in his workshop, doing stuff, like having a good time, to sitting in front of the computer and telling some AI to generate something for him, and then maybe enhance this kind of thing again with the computer. Yeah, which is...
I have one opposing view.
Yeah, yeah. go ahead.
Because I think art changes also, you know, because then if this is... If art is not creating images anymore, then creating art is become something else, as it always has evolved. Sorry?
The code.
Yeah, not even the code. It's something that we might not envision already, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Before Picasso, it was very nice to draw, like, foot. To realistic pictures, images with, like, that really looked clean and really looked realistic. And then Picasso came in and drew like weird stuff, and it was just very different from what the actual art in that moment was. So maybe if art becomes boring because AI can just generate any images, art becomes something completely different. That I now cannot imagine, but yeah.
So the point that I actually wanted to make is not that, well, maybe the art becomes better or more interesting or whatever, but what I'm most certain of is that the exercise of creating it becomes less interesting from a human perspective. Like, we are trapped in this physical body. Like, we want to do stuff with the body. But if our job evolves into a situation where all we do is like sitting in front of the PC, writing text, telling the PC, hey, generate me this kind of stuff. Like, I don't know about you guys, but this is less interesting than actually drawing on a canvas. You know?
This will be probably like a low-paid job.
And that's exactly
which sounds weird, but feeding the AI is afterwards the factory job that nobody wants to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's already happening with the creative industry right now. Like, if you work in an agency, for example, one of the most dissatisfying and boring things you can do is look for stock pictures. Like, if you need to find a stock picture for something, it's the most frustrating thing, because you are all the time looking at people smiling in a cringe way, you know? So this is kind of very frustrating work, like the factory job.
Yeah.
And if now the most creative job that we can do is being replaced by such a boring
task,
then it's very dystopian.
The creatives need to move on, then. They will need to find something else.
Okay, this was the last episode of this podcast.
No, but we're talking about creative industry, not necessarily creators.
Yeah.
It's still different, I think. Well, I mean, at least in my how I understood it, it's more the people creating visuals or, yeah.
But if you think about it, if, like, we discussed that also before, that you can you can replicate a voice.
Not only a voice, you can also
conversation. You can talk to them.
You even have like those AI generated avatars on like Synthesia, for example.
Yeah.
Like, they, you send them a recording, they generate the avatar for you, and the avatar is gonna speak like a TV host in front of the camera. Like, there are entire TikTok channels where with AI generated avatars. You have these...
I didn't know that.
Like, this person does not exist was one of the first platforms, actually. I think it's built by NVIDIA, where you go to the website, thispersondoesnotexist.com, you refresh the site, and every time you refresh, it's going to generate a new
face.
Picture of a human face. And now you take, I don't know, 500 pictures of the same person, you send it to the AI algorithm, the AI algorithm generates a real avatar from it, you give this avatar an AI voice, you tell him or her what to say, and tuck, you have your...
You have content.
You have a creator that does not exist, which is a huge competition as well for the human creator.
I don't know about you guys, but like, this podcast is for creators, you know? Like, you're essentially telling like this is not something to pursue. So can you change their minds a little bit? I don't know.
So actually, I think we can make a very good bridge here, because how we came to this dystopian part now was you asking how can we prepare for like for create, like as a creator, how can you prepare for the future?
Yeah.
And actually, I think you can never fade technology. You know, you're like, if you're thinking, I don't need this, or it's fine, but don't be surprised if you're overtaken at some point. Just like follow what's going on in technology, because not only will it make your life easier in some aspects, but also you will realize when there's like an existential threat to your profession or to what you're good at, to your edge, actually.
You already know.
Yeah. And so if you start looking into these things and you might even come up with something innovative or some really cool creative idea that nobody has thought of with AI, that you can, something that you can maybe do with AI or Web3 or whatever, so that you can differentiate from others. Because once it's mainstream, everyone will do it, and then it's too late. It's not too late, but it's harder, which a lot of people have experienced during or after the pandemic when they started to become a creator. Suddenly everyone was at home, a lot of people were doing it, and then it was really hard to get like an edge of, if you had started before, then the moment where everyone goes online, you are already there.
Biggest regret of my life.
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
Yeah.
I was the first one to tell everyone, to tell my sister who's an actress, like, go on to TikTok. Never. I was like, no, I'm not going.
Yeah. So. It's exactly, TikTok is a great example. It's actually exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And TikTok is also what we were talking about 3 years ago. Like, we were telling everybody, this is going to be the next thing. And that's exactly what happened during the pandemic. Suddenly everybody was on TikTok.
Yeah.
Because people had more time, so more got into the attention economy. And that's, at the end of the day, that's the conflict that we're going to have. Like, there's only a limited amount of attention available, and you will have eventually to compete with bots, AI, with these two, like with the machines.
And you are already, in a way.
Of course, this is already happening, but in my opinion, it's only going to get worse.
So how is it already happening?
Well, you're competing with the algorithm, basically. I should say you compete against other creators, but you should collaborate with the algorithm, actually, so that you use it in your advantage. And then again, if you informed yourself in the beginning of Instagram, when Facebook came out, about the technology that's behind, how it works, that it's an algorithm, how the algorithm works. If you figure that out before other people, you have an edge.
Yeah.
And this is exactly the same in the future. It will not change. This has I think this has always been like this for humans. The people that had an edge were those that were ready with technology that was still in the beginning, and then suddenly everyone was using it. And the moment where it tips, you have the edge, and everyone is asking you, oh my God. How is this working? And then you can help, and you can provide, and then that's when the S curve is the steepest, you know. The same principles that made good content creators now principles will also make good creators in the future, because a good creator usually is like, has a niche, or is very concerned about a small set of things.
Mm-hmm.
That he or she experiences and expresses to their audience. And the only thing that changes are the tools that are used. Exactly. And to be like, we are not saying that you have to be scared that AI will now take over your creator job. It's just your mission to not fade everything that's going on and just like say, I don't need this. And then suddenly there's like a creator who has a really cool AI model that like does something on their channel, and then everyone is putting their attention there, and you're like doing this content from back in the days, which then, that's attention economy.
Something very important that we are also seeing in the agency, for example, and I think it's a very good example to represent what you just said, is that videos on TikTok compared to videos on YouTube like a few years ago, or like the campaigns that you do as a marketing agency. Like today, the campaigns, like you have 2 seconds to catch the user's attention, so it needs to be like some kind of super nice hook right in the beginning. Like, you cannot do intros, you cannot do like 10 second intro where after 10 seconds the logo appears and then, I don't know, some guy starts talking after 15 seconds. Like, this stuff just don't work anymore. So, yeah.
And creators adapted to that as well.
Creators adapted like crazy to this. Yeah. And now you already have this kind of conflict that you have per individual creators that are way more successful on the platforms. And if you pay a marketing agency to do some kind of advertising campaign, and this agency is not on top of the game, for example, they don't realize this stuff, that they are competing with content that is way more attention grabbing.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is very.
So that's where there is already a place where marketing agencies are kind of like controlled by creators.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because the numbers also, when you simply look at the numbers that an individual creator has on a platform like TikTok, the comparison is just off the charts.
Yeah.
Like as a company, when you post a meme, it's cringe. When you post a meme as an individual creator, it's funny as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, you have so many more means to express yourself as an individual person than you have as a company. And that's also one of our biggest challenges, actually, because we've been seeing this stuff for quite a while now. And we've also always tried like not to take ourselves too serious also as the company, because if we would start to try to switch gears somehow, like, it just wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunately for many companies what's happening right now. That they just can't grab the attention of people anymore.
In the same way than a creator can. An individual.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Because I have somehow a bad feeling because you said it sounds like doomsday, because what we're actually
saying is something positive.
Yeah, what we're actually observing in the market what we are feeling with everything, with AI, Web3, and also this dynamic, how people perceive companies, it's actually power to the people, power to the creators, power to the individuals who are actually doing something without trying to sell anything, but they're just doing it for the love of the thing, you know, the real amateurs, you know, amatore. That's where amateur comes from, the people that love stuff. And that's what you want to watch, you know, in the end. You don't want to watch the videos on Instagram, the ads where they say, hey, I have this book and it's amazing and you can like read it. You don't care.
That was the best advertising ever.
Okay, so I'm a bad creator in that sense.
No, it's good.
No, but
you show your personality.
I hope I made my point. You don't want to watch people sell stuff. You just want to watch people who enjoy creating and doing these things just for the love of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the things that we were describing now are actually making or giving much more opportunities and opportunities for people to actually fulfill themselves in that sense. Because AI, okay, it's scary, it can make images and it can maybe replace some jobs, etc. But it also gives you as an individual much more power and much more freedom to do stuff, because the AI can take a lot of care of a lot of things that you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually focus on the stuff that you want to do.
And you know how it is, if you align yourself in a certain way, the universe will conspire to make it work. And that's of course what also happening to us right mm-hmm. now. And that's maybe also one of the most important advice I can give to anybody. Like, if you really commit into doing something, eventually you will be successful. Maybe not in the first version of what you were planning to do,
mm-hmm.
but you will learn so much in the process that at some point there is no way you can fail.
I love that.
Should I give you my favorite quote? It's from a Japanese samurai. It goes something like this: step by step, walk the 1,000-mile road. Over the years, achieve the spirit of the warrior. Today is victory over yourself of yesterday. Tomorrow is victory over lesser men. And that's exactly like this. If you do the grind, if you do the hustle, at some point you will earn the fruits of your labor.
yeah, this is at the end of the podcast. these are the things that I want to hear. These are the things that I want to hear on the podcast.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Let's go.
So, yeah.
So what is your favorite quote, Jack?
It was always one by Napoleon, but it changed actually because Mish told me this quote and I looked up the samurai and then I went through his stuff. And at some point he says, think lightly of yourself and deeply about the world. And that's for me, that's my favorite quote.
Amazing.
Well, one of the last questions. Who is your favorite creator?
Can you start, please? Because I've always a very big difficulty to like pick favorites.
Who are you a super fan of?
My favorite creator is Mark Radinovich. It's a friend of mine who made one YouTube video and he's currently working on his second video. It's good stuff.
We'll link his channel on the description.
Please do.
If I would have to be really honest, my favorite creator, who is not even a creator right now, the person that I enjoy the most is Kobe on Twitter. It's stupid, but I just like him. I don't know why.
He's a creator.
He is a creator, but not really. He's just like a persona on Twitter, and they had like podcasts, but I just enjoy his persona and the way he interacts with the whole space. I don't know.
Okay.
If I have to pick a favorite, I would choose him.
Okay.
Even if he rock pulled me or whatever sometimes. I don't know. If he dumped his bags on me, I don't care. I like his person.
Okay.
Person he represents, because maybe it's very different. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What is the biggest lesson that you guys learned in Web3?
In how money works.
Yeah. On top of very good point. And on top of that, that incentives are everything. Like everything works with incentives.
Okay.
We don't realize it, but it feels like this is how everything works.
Could you elaborate on that?
Well, let's say it like this, you know, in Web3, you see the flows and you see actually what's happening and you actually see concrete incentives in different protocols and whatever. And you also, on the other hand, you have the narratives and the stuff that the companies or the projects are talking about. And very often they are very different. Like what is portrayed outside is a little bit different than the incentives that are actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you see how the behavior of different parties who know the one thing and the other thing, or the people who know different things, behave differently.
Mm-hmm.
And if you extrapolate this on your normal life also, and you watch a little bit what's happening, you just see that people very often just act on incentives and not really on morals or ethics or rational thoughts. It's very often just incentive-based. Willingly or not, very often we don't even know that we are actually following an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
We just think that we made that choice because I want this so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there a space where we can do according to our morals and the incentives?
Yeah, that's up to everyone, I think, to everyone personally. It's like to be conscious. The goal is to be conscious about yourself and why you're taking decisions and just question yourself or the thing you call yourself to question if that's actually you or if it was just an impulse or it's hard to put into words. I mean, we had this talk, you're watching me right now and I know you're thinking about that talk.
I'm like, yes, I know what you're talking about.
I have difficulty to put this into words, but I think it's for everyone personally to be reflective about yourself and to actually question, like, put your pride aside and question if this is actually you who, like, really wanted to do something, or if it's subconsciously something that drives you to do stuff.
Okay, we are, first and foremost, I want to say thank you for this amazing conversation, because we've had some technical difficulties that no one will know about, but that's okay.
Thanks for inviting us.
No problem. You're very welcome. The last question is really simple. How can the people listening support you guys?
So we will use
where can they follow? Where can they follow you?
Use neontools.io, which is our own platform. Like the thing is, we always try to help other people. So when you ask this kind of question, it's very difficult. We have the Neon Academy, which is an e-learning platform that's completely for free. So yeah,
use our stuff and talk about it.
You can become a client at the agency.
Join the community. That's the thing. Actually.
Yeah, that's very good
actually
one.
The thing. How to support us is join the community, join our Discord, talk with us, like enjoy your time with us, and share nice news, interesting
knowledge,
whatever. Share your ideas with us and just elevate the whole community.
Love that.
And usually out of that, there's a lot of cool things coming out.
And put the neon page in your bio on Instagram.
As well.
Instead of Linktree.
Nice one. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.